Yeah, the only thing I regret is I meant to grab a thing of tissues and I forgot.
If so, that becomes an issue, we can get some.
Yeah, but I should be all right. It's mostly just drainage. Like, I don't know that I'm... I feel like hell, but I think I'm just worn down.
Is this like... do you think you're on the upswing or like the downhill portion?
Right in the middle of it.
All right.
Yeah.
I was hoping you weren't saying like I'm on the downswing, because I'm thinking to myself, fuck. Not unlike the thing. I
We're
hope you don't
in a room
infect
for the
me.
Next
right, exactly.
So. I don't think it's anything that's gonna pass around, because it's something else going on inside. Like,
do you have Ebola?
I hope not. There was a case in Niles.
Ebola?
Yeah.
Some bitch.
Or West Nile.
I think it was. It's West Nile.
Okay.
Which is different.
Eh. It was something.
More or less. It was the stuff from the bay. That's whatever that was. What's up? This is Movies On Up. The future is clear. The co-host of this wonderful show, Mr. Dave Bacella, soldiering on as far as I can put him on the other side of the room from me. How you feeling, Dave?
Oh, not bad, but it just kind of feels like it's the kind of thing that I'll probably feel this for the next 3 weeks at least.
The great thing is, because we're gang recording these, you were probably sick like last episode, and then you got better because that was 2 weeks ago, and just... Interesting time shift.
We've messed with the time space-time continuum so much. I have no idea.
More than Star Trek.
Yeah. We're so far ahead banking episodes that I don't know how often I've been sick and how often I haven't. But
more often than not, you've been sick. But more often than not, you soldier on nonetheless. That's Dave. I'm Ryan. The future is clear is our tagline for this week. If you know what movie that belongs to, you can win yourself a prize if you do one simple thing. Let us know the answer in one of the three following ways. You can send your guess to us in an email, moviesonup@gmail.com. You can leave your guess on our Facebook page, which lives at facebook.com/moviesonup, or tweet your answer directly at my sick co-host, Mr. Dave Bacella, at Movies On Up on the Twitter. If you are correct, and if we choose you, actually, what will happen is the UPS driver will show up and a prize package will be left behind at your home. How's that?
That's the Ryan I know.
Yeah. It's been a while since we've recorded, so we're both getting back onto things. We're getting back onto a list made of one specific actor this week, and it is because Left Behind comes out in theater. The Nicolas Cage reboot of the Kirk Cameron joint Left Behind. So that got us to thinking, or I think that got Dave to thinking, what are our favorite Nicolas Cage movies? Originally, I didn't think this would be that tough of a list to do, because I thought, yeah, I'll be able to find five Nick Cage movies I liked. I had some trouble.
Here's the thing, is I thought it would be one of those, like Denzel, we went through and I could do like 20.
Right.
Robin Williams was like 20.
Oh, we didn't even do that list.
Yeah, like movies that I like a lot. Nick Cage, it's like, I got a bunch that are okay. And then like my top two, I absolutely love. And they're my go-tos when it's like, oh, people give Nick Cage crap. It's like, oh, when he wants to, he's really good, like in these two movies. But then outside of one and two, it was like, I guess these will fill out my top five.
Yeah, I think this is going to be a top-heavy list from both of us. I'm interested to see like what your filler was. And I'm guessing your filler starts at number five. So without further ado, what is your fifth favorite Nick Cage movie?
My number five is one of the more recent Nick Cage movies from 2011, and it's one of the Nick Cagiest of Nick Cage movies. It was Drive Angry, starring him, William Fichtner, Amber Heard. I don't do 3D, but something about when this movie came out, I had to see this movie in 3D.
No, there's been good movies that came out in 3D, and I was like, hey, Dave, you should see this in 3D.
I don't do 3D.
Shut up.
But this looked so ridiculous. But from the trailers, it didn't look like it got it. It looked like a typical Nick Cage movie where it's supposed to be good, but
this
it's just
can't
ridiculous.
Be, but it's not in on the joke?
Yeah, yeah. But then you watch this, and it sets the tone pretty early on that, oh, it's in on it. It knows what's going on, and it takes it to 11. It's just a fun, stupid, ridiculous movie. Nick Cage is total Nick Cage. William Fichtner is is trying to match Nick Cage, and he's awesome in it. And then Amber Heard is just beautiful in whatever she does. It just, it's a ridiculous movie. They really played with the 3D, and it was one of those, felt like an 80s 3D movie because some of the 3D was just thrown in there just because they could. As a standalone movie, just pretty ridiculous and just silly and dumb, but completely tongue-in-cheek. And I thought it was hella entertaining.
Is it worth seeing if you have to see it in 2D?
Probably. Just because it's fun. If you know what you're going into, if you go in thinking like, hey, somebody went to Nick Cage and said, hey, let's make a Nick Cage movie. And he was like, all right. Then you're going to be happy with what you got, because he's in on it more than he seems like he usually is. And it's just a lot of fun.
My number five is a movie that's not necessarily a lot of fun, but it does have some pretty good violence in it. It is maybe before Nicolas Cage was really Nick Cage, but I think all the seeds were there in David Lynch's Wild at Heart from 1990, starring Nick Cage, Laura Dern, and Willem Dafoe. There are a few things that I actually do like about this movie. Really, all of these movies on my list. As a matter of fact, there are some things that I like about them. But oftentimes, Nick Cage isn't really one of the things that I like about the movie. And this is a perfect example. I kind of think he's awful in this. He spends most of the movie doing some sort of Elvis impersonation. Laura Dern, on the other hand, is very good. She spends most of the movie doing what I will call a Juliette Lewis impersonation. I understand that Laura Dern's much older, but Juliette Lewis does that kind of southern white trash kind of girl much better than Laura Dern does. This might be the best example of an accessible David Lynch movie. It is, obviously, it's not told completely linearly. I think he's incapable of doing that. But you can still follow most of the events in the movie. Basically, what happens is Nick Cage and Laura Dern drive from New Orleans to California to bail on his parole. And Diane Ladd, who plays Laura Dern's mom very well, might I add, as over the top and unhinged as Nick Cage usually is, she is that and so much more in this movie. But I actually like the way she pulls it off. She hires a couple of assassins to kill Nick Cage, and it doesn't really go well for either of those. Spoiler alert. Things, as you might expect from a David Lynch movie, do get a little surreal, and in a movie that does seem somewhat grounded for the most part, it does veer off into these surreal moments from time to time, and that gets a little weird. On a side note, there's a robbery scene kind of at the end with Cage and Dafoe that has a pretty rad ending, and as I said, there's some pretty brutal deaths. They kind of bookend the movie, one right at the beginning, one right at the end. But, I mean, it's one of the few David Lynch things I actually can understand and really figure out what the hell happened. So, yeah, if you want to kind of dip your toe into David Lynch, maybe try this one, Wild at Heart.
Speaking of dipping your toe in something that you might not usually, I'm going to go on the more snuff film side of Nick Cage's career with my number four. It is 1999's 8mm, directed, oddly enough, by Joel Schumacher. It's a far cry from Batman and Robin. This is a cool movie. I said my 3, 4, and 5 weren't whatever. I mean, I enjoyed it, but this is one of those that you don't want to enjoy. It's a good movie, though. Cage is actually really good in it. Joaquin Phoenix steals every scene he's in as Max California, which is one of my favorite movie characters ever. It's just really dark. It's Nick Cage is a private investigator. Somebody comes to him with a snuff film, and it's his job to investigate whether it's real or fake, and that takes him into a whole dark world of snuff films.
Where who'd have thought?
James Gandolfini and snuff films. And it's really good. Gandolfini's in it. He's really good. It's creepy. It's dark. I mean, it's messed up. It's a weird turn at Nick Cage in that phase in his career, because, like, Snake Eyes was kind of dark, but it still had that feel like some of his mid-90s action movies. This was just something, not really an action movie, not...
It seems closer...
Like, it was more of a mystery, but...
Closer to, like, Seven than Con Air.
Yeah, exactly. And it was... You're going to hate me for using this term, but it was... It felt like a modern film noir, just in the sense that it's one guy and he has this case, and it didn't pull from the noir tropes, but it was the same kind of structure. And it's one of those movies I don't want to say like, oh, I enjoyed it, or oh, it's really entertaining, or it's a fun watch.
I don't think it means that you like snuff films if you say that. Or does it?
I mean, if they're well done, like, I'm all for good.
If they're shot well.
If they're shot well, no, the pun story's intended. Good. Yeah. But, yeah, so, I mean, 8mm is just a lot of fun. And it's worth watching almost alone for Joaquin Phoenix, because this was really at the start of Joaquin Phoenix showing the world that he can do just about anything. Like, this was a really awesome role for him.
I think it's interesting you bring up Joel Schumacher. Like, my favorite Joel Schumacher movie is Falling Down.
I forgot that was a Schumacher movie.
Yeah, like, he's done some movies that you're like, oh, that's right. Like, he kind of does some violent stuff, too. But, and I say that Falling Down has sort of a sense of humor to it.
A dark sense of humor.
Yeah, this movie doesn't even have that.
No.
So
no, it
it's pretty much, take all the fun and lightheartedness out of Falling Down and add in snuff.
Like, even somebody like Max California should be, like, just his character in a normal movie would be comedic relief. He's not. I mean, Joaquin Phoenix plays it so great, and it's like, you have an opportunity with that kind of character to be the kind of comedic relief, but there wasn't room for it in this movie, and yeah, I enjoyed it.
I watched it and thought it was, I haven't seen it again, but yeah, you know, it's decent. I think it'd be pretty easy, as much as I struggle to come up with five, it would be pretty easy to just go through that run of Nick Cage action flicks in the mid to late 90s and just put them all on there, because realistically, they're all great. You could make the argument that Nick Cage had as good of a string of action flicks as anybody that had ever done it. And if he had chosen to, I think Nick Cage absolutely could have been like the next Bruce Willis, where he is your go-to bankable action movie star. I picked kind of one out of those in case you had someone. I didn't want there to be a ton of crossover, but I can't not put Face Off from 1997 on my list, directed by John Woo, starring Nick Cage, John Travolta, and Joan Allen. I think that this one, it's my favorite of all those, and if you really want to kind of differentiate between, all right, well, if you're only going to pick one, which one do you pick? I pick Face Off because I feel like it had a little bit more going on plot-wise. Essentially, you have an identity switch between the two characters. They quite literally inhabit each other's body, which is not the most high concept of plot lines, but I think it makes for some fun scenes when you know as the viewer that, oh, that's not who he or she thinks it is. I did think that Cage seemed a little forced when he was playing the bad guy, whereas I thought Travolta really kind of could carry off either one pretty well. When he was bad, he was kind of a scuzzball, but you know, he was still kind of likable as the good guy. So really, either way, I think Travolta kind of shined in that movie, and Cage just felt a little goofy when he was the bad guy. And I do love John Woo. This was, I think, the first John Woo movie that I ever saw, and it made me very much happy to go back and watch Hard Boiled, which is one of the best action flicks ever. And if you haven't seen that, you really need to. It's phenomenal. Obviously, if I could put Hard Boiled on my list, it would have been on here, and Face Off wouldn't have been. But Hard Boiled doesn't have Nick Cage. If they wanted to do a remake starring Nick Cage, I'd watch it, because Inspector Tequila is that damn cool.
Face Off is one of those that, if you were to pitch that now, like, it sounds like a joke. Like, okay, we have Nick Cage, who's a punchline, John Travolta, who's a punchline, and they switch faces. Not switch identity. It's not a Freaky Friday type thing.
Nope.
They actually take
their
faces
off. Yep.
Considering they're two completely different body types, if you get on board for it.
And somehow it also takes their vocal cords,
yeah,
and everything like that. Yeah.
Yeah. If you can get on board for it, which going in with that kind of a premise, how do you not go in? Like, you
in fairness, I saw it in seventh grade and didn't care.
You have to be on board for a premise like that. If you can get on board for it, though, it's a fun time. And this was, he did have that nice little run there. I don't want to mention them in case they're on yours. None of them are
they're
on.
They're not,
mine.
No.
Like that mid-90s run where it was Con Air,
the
Face
Rock.
Off, The Rock.
Yeah.
I mean, those were all huge movies that to this day people still love. Like, they were great 90s action movies. My number three or whatever, in the middle of that run,
yeah,
but not necessarily a Nicolas Cage movie. I'm going to 1995's Kiss of Death. It's more a David Caruso movie. This was the David Caruso leaving NYPD Blue to be a movie star. And then this movie just bombed majorly. It's got David Caruso, but it's also got Samuel L. Jackson and Nicolas Cage in one of my favorite Nick Cage roles. He played Little Junior Brown. And he didn't have to carry this movie. He was the bad guy. He was just a dude and a wife beater that liked to beat people to death. And, you know, the movie was, okay, Caruso gets out of prison and he's getting drawn back into the life, whatever. You can say what you will about the plot and the garbage, the cliche after cliche, but, you know, the Michael Rapaport death scene with Nick Cage and just Nick Cage bench pressing the girl, like, while having a conversation, like, it's a fun Nick Cage. Like, it's worth watching just for Nicolas Cage. There's a reason Caruso didn't really pick up as a movie star and ended up back on TV as a punchline. But Nick Cage in this movie was pretty awesome. And it's hard to justify watching a whole movie for one performance, especially if it's Nick Cage. But him as Little Junior Brown in Kiss of Death, I absolutely loved.
When he does just strange things, like, he's one of those guys that you could see him doing this stuff, like, in real life. There's a scene in Wild at Heart where he's somewhat, like, slam dancing, throwing karate moves like he actually was Elvis. I could see him doing that. Like, hey, Nick, show me some of your karate. And then, like, an 8-year-old, he's just like, yeah, check it out. Yeah, yeah. I don't know if he's all there, but maybe like a train wreck.
He's made it work.
He has made it work. I think at this point we actually get to some performances. I know you like this one, and I'm pretty sure it's on your list somewhere, because I know you like the movie an awful lot. But I was scraping, so I had to put Matthew Vaughn's Kick-Ass on here from 2010, starring Aaron Taylor-Johnson, Chloe Grace Moretz, and, of course, Nicolas Cage. This is absolutely Hit Girl's movie. But some of my favorite scenes are with her and Nick Cage. Pretty much everyone else in the movie is going way over the top, and Nick Cage was kind of, not to say that he was grounding everyone, but he was deadpan in his craziness. He was just as nuts, but deadly serious when he was saying it. And I think that's kind of what made the character of Big Daddy somewhat believable and kind of stand out. When he goes all Nick Cage on a movie, like he tends to do from time to time, it really kind of makes my eyes want to roll right out of their socket. And I think that on some level that might have fit with a character like Hit Girl, with a character like Red Mist, but the fact that he was sort of understated and sort of did play a completely crazy Batman, I could see Nick Cage being a completely crazy Batman. This is the superhero, whether he wants to admit it or not. I think this is the superhero he was born and destined to play, and he did it well, and I think he should just stop.
I love this movie. It would have been up here, but I left it off just because,
oh, good.
I feel we've talked about it so much, and I thought you might throw it on there. Even if you didn't, it was going to get talked about and also Rand's. I mean, he's so good in this movie, and they changed the character of Big Daddy in the origins for the movie from the comic, and a lot of people that had read the comic were kind of disappointed in that, but just the, spoiler alert, the death scene makes up for it, I think. Like, if you throw in that extra subplot in there during that death scene that the comics did, it loses the impacting feel of that death scene. Because that scene's awesome, not just the strobe lights and Chloe Grace Moretz with the night vision. Like, he's actually pretty...
during a crazy action scene, he's kind of acting.
He's really acting. And, like, I don't want to say, like, Nick Cage burning to death is a genre, but if it is, I would watch everything possible, because Nick Cage burning to death was, it's serious enough, but it's just Nick Cage enough that, like, it feels something. Like, it felt, I mean, I don't know what I'm trying to say. It just, he was acting, but he was Nick Cage acting. So it was.
That's absolutely, if you were to burn Nick Cage to death in yes. real life, that's what it would be.
Yes, and it would be entertaining, like, minus the smell probably. But, I mean, he was really fun to watch in that scene. You know, but yeah, I like Kick-Ass, but I didn't put it on there. My number two, though, if you ever want to question Nick Cage as an actor, if you ever want to say he can't act, he's gotten lucky a couple times, he does what he does, I call total bullshit on any of those arguments just based on 2002's adaptation. He plays Charlie Kaufman and his brother, Donald Kaufman, in a Spike Jonze movie written by Charlie Kaufman. It's such an odd movie, but just watching him as Charlie Kaufman's a regular role for Nick Cage. He's just a guy. Like, he's,
this would be a role or roles, I guess, that you would see, you would expect a really good character actor to be cast for, like maybe a Philip Seymour Hoffman or a guy like that, Paul Giamatti. Any number of these guys that this is what they do for a living, yeah. But instead they cast the guy that was in The Rock.
And he nailed it. I mean, he's as Charlie, he's got this task of adapting this great novel as a screenplay, and he's kind of struggling with it because he takes his craft very seriously. Then you have Donald, who's the total opposite, who just, my brother's a screenwriter, so I could be a screenwriter. And just the him explaining the concept of, I think it was Four was the name of the movie, and he's just, it's like man versus technology versus a horse. And it's just like the childlike enthusiasm that Nick Cage brought to Donald is worth watching that movie. And it's a shame that this kind of got overlooked, because I'm pretty sure, without researching, I know he didn't get nominated for an Oscar for it. And I feel like he should have been nominated just for Donald alone, but let alone Charlie. I mean, you have the two characters are very, very different, and they're played together a lot of times, and he pulls it off. And it's not just impressive because he's acting against himself. It's impressive because he brings both characters to life. I mean, you have the childlikeness of Donald, who's just kind of along for the ride, but wanting to do his own thing, even though he may not be qualified. And then you have Charlie, who has worked hard to get where he is working hard to stay where he is. So, I mean, you have kind of the straight man and the opposite of that. I mean, they're their own odd couple. And to pull that off as well as he did, I mean, the movie, it's a weird movie to begin with. Like, when I lived with listener Jason West, I would always, at the end of movies, always say, like, oh, I hope, I would say the most ridiculous thing. I'd say, like, oh, I hope this happens, and it's the most ridiculous. Adaptation is the only time that actually happened. Oh, I hope this ridiculous, insane, crazy thing happens. And it happens. So, I mean, it's an odd, unique little movie, but it's great. And it's beautifully acted by Nicolas Cage as both characters. And the fact he did not get an Oscar nomination, did he?
Yeah, I was going to say, I've done the research for you. You may want to pump the brakes on it. He did get nominated for Best Actor in a leading role.
For Oscars?
Yeah.
Not just Golden Globe. Okay, no, for some reason, yeah. No. I remembered him not getting it. He should have won, Oscar. Though.
Do you want to know who he was nominated against?
Yeah.
This is a pretty good year. Jack Nicholson in About Schmidt. Daniel Day-Lewis for Gangs of New York didn't win. And Michael Caine for The Quiet American. They all lost to Adrian Brody.
Oh, the pianist.
Yes.
That's a shame. Like, that should have been Nick Cage's year.
Bill the Butcher did not win the Oscar that year. So, unfortunately,
I'm still giving it to Nick Cage.
They really didn't stand a chance.
Yeah. But good job, Academy. Good job fixing that mistake and not nominating them by nominating them back in 2002.
Good job fixing the mistake that you didn't really make.
Yeah, but I mean, if you don't think Nick Cage can act, watch Adaptation. Even a blind squirrel finds a nut and then eats it with two different characters at the same time.
Yeah, I think that there may be some more nut finding throughout the rest of our list. My number two is a movie that I kind of put off seeing for a long time, because I thought it'd be a complete waste of my time. And it was Werner Herzog's 2009 The Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans, starring Nicolas Cage, Eva Mendes, and Val Kilmer. I had seen The Keitel Lieutenant quite a while ago and had always sort of looked at this as a completely unnecessary remake. But it really isn't that. There are a lot of similarities between Cage's detective and Keitel's. You've got your drug use, your whores, your abuse of power, gambling, pretty much like all the cool stuff that you could possibly do in
iguanas.
A given life. Yeah, everything. They share. Each have a case sort of in the middle of the movie where their life is falling apart around them. They have this case that for whatever reason they have latched onto as it may be the only way to salvage any part of their character at all if they're able to solve, and they pursue it with different levels of seeming dogged determination. I do think that there was more of an obvious attempt in the Herzog Cage Bad Lieutenant to make his character likable and redeemable throughout the entirety of the movie. Eva Mendez's hooker character helps out with that. The ending, I have a little bit of a problem with. It seems like everything ties up very, very nicely for one of our lieutenants. It's the Nick Cage one. And I think that's why I really like the Abel Ferreira Bad Lieutenant better. But I thought Cage put in a really good performance with this one. When he wants to be a jerk and be crazy and be coked out of his mind, absolutely believable. And then his physicality, he hurts his back right at the beginning of the movie, and he lumbers and stumbles his way through the rest of the movie. And I thought that was a really good trait to bring. It was absolutely needed. It was very important to the story. It's hard to not necessarily take the same role that Harvey Keitel had. It's very, very similar. He put somewhat of his own spin on it. I do think it's worth, especially if you liked the first one, I think check this one out. It's not gonna set your world on fire. But as a movie, I did really like the movie. And I think that for the most part, Nicolas Cage carried it. It is his movie. Some of the supporting cast they're in and out, and they do a nice job. If you want to have an idea of a role that Nick Cage might be able to pull off, a drug addict, you know, you would think that he could do that well, and he did.
Yeah, this was one of my also-rans. It was almost my number five. It's worth watching just for Nick Cage. I'm not going to praise his acting in it, but it's worth watching just for Nick Cage. His physicality is really good. If only his accent were is consistent.
That slips. That's bad.
Like halfway through the movie, he just changes voices almost. But the tics and stuff that he does. And if you want some entertaining, just Google Nick Cage, Iguana, Bad Lieutenant, and read some of the stories behind how the iguana ended up in the movie. It's very Nick Cagey. This movie was a little uneven. I felt he was a little too redeemable, and the ending just wrapped it up too nicely for a Bad Lieutenant movie. But something about Nick Cage and Werner Herzog, like, how is that not going to be entertaining? And it absolutely
it was.
And my number one, as much as I love Adaptation, I'll praise Nick Cage for his acting in Adaptation, but it is a weird movie. For a movie where Nick Cage acts really well in it, and it's a fantastic movie, I'm going to 2003 from Ridley Scott, Matchstick Men. You have Nick Cage, Sam Rockwell, Alison Lohman. I adore everything about this movie. Nick Cage and Sam Rockwell are just two con men. They're on the verge of pulling off a great heist, and then all of a sudden, this teenage girl shows up that claims to be Nick Cage's daughter. So it's him kind of trying to make his life better, realizing like maybe he's not just in it for himself anymore. And he's phobic. He's a very phobic con. And Nick Cage is at his best when his character has quirks, because he's very good at pulling off quirks.
I think he himself is kind of a quirky
dude. Oh, he does.
Yeah.
He does. And that's why it's so good, because he understands stuff. And with the character in Matchstick Men, he's not socially inept. He just has a lot of quirks and tics to him. And he pulls them off really well. And to see a character like that trying to adapt to being a father of a beautiful teenage girl and skipping everything up until then, it's just really, really entertaining. And it takes some turns that he brings life to the character that makes you feel bad when stuff goes wrong for him and you just want it to go well. And Sam Rockwell, this might be the movie, other than Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, that introduced me to Sam Rockwell. It's such a good Sam Rockwell role. And I swore Alison Lohman was going to be a star after this movie, and then she just kind of hasn't done a whole bunch. But it's just such a good movie. I mean, it's well-directed. Ridley Scott did awesome. Just great acting from all three leads. And it's a fun movie. It's got a lot of heart. It's got a lot of comedy. And it's got enough to keep you into it. And I just absolutely love this movie.
My number one is a movie that, obviously, in addition to it being number one on my list here, it very easily could have found its way onto my list next week. But because it's much easier to find a movie that I like about hookers than it is a movie that I like about Nicolas Cage, especially leaving off my favorite.
You mean last week's episode?
Oh, yeah, sure. Last week's episode. Whatever. We told you, we bend the space-time continuum at will around Movies on Up. That's just what we do. Last week, I would love to have put Leaving Las Vegas on my list, because I love Elizabeth Shue's hooker character in that movie. She's great. But by far, the shining star from Mike Figg's 1995 joint is Nicolas Cage. I know I've gushed about this movie before, because I genuinely do love this movie. It could make any number of lists. So the fact that I have to do a list of my favorite Nicolas Cage, I can't not put this on. Sometimes, you know, we like to try and be cute, leave obvious things off, and I think we did a decent job today. I mean, I picked some obvious ones, but this one I can't leave off. And I think, like you said, he was very underrated in Adaptation, nominated for an Oscar Nicolas Cage is kind of a punchline, and a lot of it's his fault. But this movie, no matter how many Ghost Riders or Left Behinds he does, this is the reason he will always be referred to as Academy Award winner Nicolas Cage, because he won for Best Actor in this movie, and he damn should have. We talked about how loaded 2003 was with Jack, with Daniel Day-Lewis. This one, he went up against Richard Dreyfuss, Anthony Hopkins, and Sean Penn, and he beat all of them. And he did absolutely turn in an incredible performance. And it's very strange to me that watching this movie, carrying the pretty much the entire film on his own, I don't understand why you don't see this kind of a performance from Nick Cage more. As much as I liked Bad Lieutenant, we said, you know, he kind of, his accent, he slips in and out of character at times. I mean, it really felt like he went all method and became Ben Sanderson and lived that character, because he nails it dead nuts from beginning to end. And you talked about, how you want it, and it's very easy for you to want his character in Bad Lieutenant to be redeemed at the end. You kind of feel bad for this character. You watch him just circle the drain and think, well, maybe he'll pull out of it. Maybe he'll pull out of it. Maybe he'll pull out of it. Spoiler alert, maybe not so much. I think it's a damn shame that after seeing this, that directors can't find roles that he can do well. There's Adaptation, Leaving Las Vegas, Matchstick Men. There's a handful of performances in our list that demonstrate that the guy does have some talent, and why the hell we can't figure out a way to showcase that talent more, and he is, you know, ends up doing Season of the Witch or that Wicker Man thing that was an abomination, or he's doing 13 Ghost Rider movies. I think that's bad on Hollywood. They're underutilizing a guy that obviously has some level of talent.
And I mean, when he's reined in, like just recently, just a couple of years ago, or within the past few years, Joe, David Gordon Green directed, who is phenomenal with actors, and he's reeled in. He's a really good performance from him in that. So he still has it, but I feel like a lot of times people are making Nick Cage movies just to make Nick Cage movies. And they're just making what has become a Nick Cage movie.
What people think it should be. I mean,
like, yeah. Bangkok Dangerous. Right. That's I'm going to get Nick Cage. He can do whatever he wants because I have Nick Cage. But when you get a director like a Ridley Scott, a Schumacher, a David Gordon Green, that want to reel him in, Spike Jonze, that want to say, hey, Nick Cage, do this. He does take direction well. Like, when he works with a great director, he gives a great performance.
And I don't necessarily want to say that, you know, he is this version of this, but you look at a film like Joe. I put that up with a movie like Mud, what that did for McConaughey,
yeah,
who became this really serious actor and won his Academy Award. I mean, Nick Cage has already got one. He had one in 1995. But looking at what he's got coming down the line, National Treasure 3, which is fine. I mean, that's an adventure series, okay. The Croods 2, he's doing Left Behind. You know, these are his follow-ups to Joe. So I he's really all over the place. He'll do, you know, those action movies that we talked about in the 90s. And then, like, right off the heels of that, almost to just say, well, okay, this is what you think I am, does City of Angels, which was fine. He was good in that. Like the love story that was City of Angels. I wouldn't call the very next year's 8mm a laugh riot. You know what I mean? Like, as crazy as the guy is on film, it seems like his filmography is that scattershot too.
I mean, yeah, you can read about Nicolas Cage and know that he buys ridiculous stuff, that he's always had trouble with bankruptcy because he gets a paycheck and then goes buys the Elephant Man's finger or something like that. Like, it's...
He's a bit of a collector. Comics have ruined him, too.
And, I mean, what I wish would have been on either of our lists is the failed Tim Burton Superman, which that's a whole other thing. They're trying to kickstart a documentary about that, which I would be super interested in, because I don't see Nick Cage as Superman. And even in the mock-ups with him in the suit and the mullet, I don't see Nick Cage as Superman. But some of the other ones I liked, I had Bad Lieutenant, Kick-Ass. He had a run there in the mid-90s when he wasn't doing action movies. It would be... like Amos and Andrew, which was him and Samuel L. Jackson, which was just a fun comedy. And then Trapped in Paradise, with him, Dana Carvey, John Lovitz. Another just fun comedy that he brings heart to. Like both of those movies, his characters aren't the greatest people, but he brings a lot of heart to them. And then in that quirky Nick Cage, right around the time he did The Family Man, but the one I liked better was The Weatherman, because that was just Nick Cage slowly losing his mind gradually and really fun. So, I mean, our top five had covered, 25 years of his career?
Yeah.
And we didn't even get into, like, Raising Arizona or
Yeah, I was going to say, like,
Fast
Raising,
Times,
Raising like, Arizona and Moonstruck, those were both 87, especially Moonstruck. That's probably one that maybe fans of Nicolas Cage might find surprising that we left off. But, I mean, I didn't like Moonstruck as much as I liked Wild at Heart. And Raising Arizona, I do like a lot, but that was one that I just didn't want to put on a Nicolas Cage list because I think I've had it on something else.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, it was a fun list to do. It just wasn't. Usually when we have actor ones, it's like, oh, there's so many. But this one, it's like, I really like a few of these. And then the others are like, I enjoyed those.
I had to convince myself that, yeah, the exploits of Sailor Ripley are absolutely worth a number five spot on my list. But if we happen to miss your favorite Nick Cage movie, if you're a big fan of Honeymoon in Vegas, that's a pretty good flick. You know, let us know about it. moviesonup@gmail.com, facebook.com/moviesonup, or @moviesonup on the Twitter. Judging by the correction that Dave made of me earlier in this podcast, I'm guessing this is our last show of September, which means that we are turning the calendar to October, and it will be the entire month of Halloween around Movies on Up parts. So we're going to have two episodes every week, horror-themed episodes for the entire month. We're going to do one movie and one list per week, and I would like to be able to tell you that I know both of those topics, but I will cede to Mr. Dave Pacella, who I know, in fact, does know what we're doing next week.
Next week, we're kicking off with our scariest movies. Not necessarily scariest movies ever made, just what scared us the most personally. And watching an all-time classic that we've brought up many, many times on this show, not just in October, but all the time.
That's pretty much the entire month of October. The movies that we're going to watch,
yeah.
Maybe they're not all-time classics, but we've brought them up an awful lot. So
yeah.
Now we're going to.
This one is an all-time classic, one of the best horror movies ever made, one of the best movies ever made. John Carpenter's The Thing.
So stick around for that. If you happen to miss our Hooker episode from last week, apparently, that'll be up on moviesonup.com. But definitely check in with us through October. Like I said, we'll have double the Movies on Up for you for that month. This is it for September. Until October,
keep it up.